From the Christian Research Institute in Charlotte, North Carolina, this is the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. We're on the air because truth matters. Life matters more. On today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man, we pick up where we ended on our previous broadcast and present more of an episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast. Hank is talking with Dr. Carrie Gress, author of The End of Woman, How Smashing the Patriarchy Has Destroyed Us. Let's now join Hank Hanegraaff and Carrie Gress in their conversation.
There's all these crazy stories about Betty Friedan actually just being a complete tyrant. There was one show that she told the producer that if they didn't give her way about something, she was going to say this bad word 11 times live on air. It was those kinds of things, that, you know, again, these mean girl tactics to get their way. And, you know, all the while, of course, you know, using makeup and savvy clothing and, you know, all these different ways of things that women are drawn into to make it look appealing. And part of it, too, was Betty Friedan was kind of a holdout on allowing lesbians and gays into the movement. Trans obviously wasn't an issue then the way it is now, but she very much was focused on heterosexual women. And, you know, some of that probably had to do with her Marxist training and just trying to be normal and look like you fit in. I mean, that was really the effort of the communists of her era. But she eventually, you know, caved on that. I think it was just the pressure of it got too big. She was at a national convention. I think it was the one in Houston for women, and eventually came out in support of it because of all these antics that were used by the women to sort of undermine anybody that was just focused on heterosexuals. So that was another piece of it that was used a lot. I think it was letting out rats at a wedding dress shop and the bra burning you hear about in Atlantic City, you know, these different ways in which they were masterful to use the media with strong visuals to make their cases as well.
You use the word masterful a few times here. The queen bees, as you call them, were masters at rhetoric, masters at using language to obscure the devastating realities of feminism.
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly right. It just all was really smoke and mirrors. And you know, you don't see the real devastation until you're with a woman who's 60, 70 years old. I had one woman I met in California recently, and she said, this was my life. This is how I lived my life. And, you know, just the deep regret that she had now that she has no husband, no children, her parents are dead, just this kind of deep isolation. And we know where that isolation comes from. It's really the effort. When we're isolated, we are weak. And that's really the whole idea of it.
Is feminism, if you were to sum it up, is it the preaching of discontent to women? I mean, is that the essence of it?
I think so. I think that that's a really good articulation, because from that comes the resentment towards men, also the sense of entitlement that women have, where we think we can do whatever we want, that we're entitled to have it all. You know, that was a really big focus of the feminist movement in the earlier years. 1970 was this myth that we could have it all. Well, we can have it all, but probably not all at once. And do you really want it all? You know, there's a lot of pieces in life to juggle. And that's the beauty, I think, of a woman's life, is just all of these different seasons. It's always changing, especially when you have children and they're growing. And I think that that kind of discontent has really undermined us in many ways, because it does make us always wanting more. And it's been highly effective.
Feminism's main achievement may well have been to obscure the meaning of womanhood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because a woman is a mother. She's meant to protect, to nurture, to shelter others, either biologically, spiritually, or psychologically. And if a woman is told that her life is all about her, then she cannot mother others in all of these capacities that she's made to mother others. So yeah, the child becomes the enemy, and we're fundamentally changed into narcissists. So yeah, I think that's right.
The third section of your book where you talk about no girls, chapter 9, Margaret and Els.
Yeah, Margaret and the Els.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you made the point that part of the genius of the women's movement was equating women's rights with those of blacks and gays. So the conflation of the categories became a major victory.
Yeah, because now you hear all kinds of language about sex blindness and whatnot, not recognizing that there are incredible distinctions and differences between men and women, and, you know, trying to erase those entirely through birth control, through abortion, you know, through this idealization of the masculine that I think has contributed significantly to the issues.
John Money, no discussion on this topic would be complete without discussing what he did in inventing the term gender identity.
Yeah, so John Money was the scientist that thought that you could actually be born with the wrong gender. You could be born, you know, like we hear all the time today, I was a man trapped in a woman's body, or, you know, vice versa or whatever. So he's doing all of his work. He ends up with these twin boys, one of whom had, there was an accident in his circumcision. And I think part of his penis was removed entirely. So he just thought, well, why don't we just test out my theory and make him a girl? And so that's what his parents did. They went along with it. And in the meantime, he's also sexually molesting these boys as they're being raised, because, of course, he has access to them through his practice. And anyway, tragically, the boy that was called the girl ended up being told the truth and went back to being a man. Both men, when they were older, committed suicide because the abuse that they had undergone was just so significant. It was obviously crushing to them. But the craziest part is that his ideas stuck. I mean, people are still using them. This is where all of the transgender, all of the trans, you know, change in gender, all of it comes from Money's work, which has been largely discredited, but people have just hung on to it and, you know, taken it on as if this is, you know, the gospel. So yeah, Money's influence is really amazing and tragic and just unbelievable that this kind of an awful, you know, therapist that had no right doing any kind of psychoanalysis on anyone was so influential on not just those boys' lives, but all of us.
Yeah. And I think Margaret Sanger fits into the same category. I mean, the enormous disservice that she has done to Western civilization, to human civilization, through birth control, through eugenic control, through population control. She was a purveyor of the population bomb myth and many other myths as well, but she was a master at that, and she wreaked havoc. I mean, you can even look at the science of being well-born and its influence on Nazi Germany and the concentration camps and the eradication of Jews.
Yeah. No, it's incredible, the eugenics movement that came out of her work. And there was no hiding. I mean, it wasn't like she was hiding this aspect of it. I mean, even Planned Parenthood comes directly from her work. So it's amazing. She's another one, exactly, that has just destroyed so much, created this wasteland, and people have this sense that her work was, you know, such a wonderful boon to civilization.
Yeah, I call her the birth mother of Planned Parenthood. You make the remarkable counterintuitive statement that birth control is the key to understanding how homosexuality went from being unacceptable to being actively embraced by American culture. Again, I find that counterintuitive, but there's a good way of contextualizing that.
Yeah. You know, back in the 80s, there was this law professor whom I've heard about. I know his family. He was a professor at Notre Dame Law. And he used to say, you know, birth control is going to lead to gay marriage. And his students thought he was nuts. Like, you're crazy. That doesn't make any kind of sense. But he was right. And the reason he was right and why he could see this back in this, you know, 70s and 80s when nobody else could see it is, again, you know, what I mentioned earlier, this idea that if heterosexual sex no longer is connected with fertility, then how is it any different from homosexual sex? It all becomes reduced to pleasure, potentially to bonding, but it's certainly not connected with children and actual family building. So if you've got enough couples who are contracepting and are taking on that attitude that their relationship is merely for sexual pleasure, it doesn't take too many steps to start seeing that heterosexual sex and homosexual sex are really the same thing. They're just about self-gratification. And that's really what has happened across the board. You know, you just hear people so lackadaisical about it, not really seeing that there are much more significant realities at play and at work than just that, you know, that sex is about gratification. But the fertility piece is really vital for understanding the family and for building up a civilization.
Yeah, you're just a master writer. You talk about the word crisis that threatens to undo Western civilization. Some elaboration on words or phrases like birthing person, bleeding person, chest feeder, egg-making person. The insanity of that, but it somehow or other has become acceptable, even in the definitions that you find in major dictionaries.
Yeah, and those are always changing. I mean, that was kind of the hard part about the book, was trying to keep up with the different changes that were happening in dictionaries. And they're always trying to navigate the trans issue and not offend anyone. And so, again, how do you come up with what a woman is? And, you know, one of my favorites is something like a woman is a non-male, you know, which, of course, could be anything, you know. But Yeah, it's really remarkable to see just how deeply this has gone and how offensive it is. It's just stripping us of real content of what it means to be human and making us very much into, you know, just sexual actors that are just seeking pleasure and gratification instead of something obviously much deeper that we all yearn for. And, you know, even if we don't know that we do, it's there, that deep desire to be loved and to love others. All of that gets lost in this because it has been reduced to gratification. Even that the latest word was thrown out was bonus hole. You know, it's just awful kind of reality of speaking about our bodies and what they're meant for.
Don't go away. In just a few moments, we'll rejoin Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with Dr. Cary Gress. Feminism, the ideology dedicated to smashing the patriarchy, has made male lives the norm for everyone. In a powerful new book, Cary Gress says what cannot be said. Feminism has abolished women. From the serpent seduction of Eve to Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, to Kate Millett's lust, violence, and insanity, to Meghan Markle's havoc-ridden rise to royalty, Dr. Gress presents a history as intriguing as the characters who lived it. The answers women most desperately need are to be found precisely where they are most afraid to look. Only a rediscovery of true womanhood and motherhood can pull our society back from the brink. To receive your copy of The End of Woman, How Smashing the Patriarchy Has Destroyed Us by Cary Gress, call us at 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's mind-shaping, life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org. Dr. Eben Alexander's wildly popular near-death experience book, Proof of Heaven, assures us that no matter what we do in this life, only unconditional love and joy await us in the world to come. But our Lord warned that while the gate to hell is wide, the road to it broad, and those who enter through it are many, the gate is narrow and the way is hard that leads to life, and those who find it are few. Your generous support lets Hank Hanegraaff and CRI speak out against the lies that lead to hell. In appreciation for your gift today, we'll rush you Hank's book, Afterlife, What You Need to Know About Heaven, the Hereafter, and Near-Death Experiences, filled with answers to your questions about life after death. Call 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org now. Again, that's equip.org. The number of wolves surrounding the Christian flock is growing, and they relish nothing more than docile sheep utterly incapable of defending themselves. From militant secularists at home to militant Islamists abroad, the assaults on biblical Christianity are growing dangerously. But Christian Research Institute support team members aren't in favor of feeding these wolves. Instead, each day they're making possible an array of outreaches that defang these wolf packs with solid arguments and evidence that have stood the test of time. What's more, support team members are equipping themselves with CRI's Equipping Essentials, a hand-picked collection of the best apologetics tools around. Your selection of resources are just our way of saying thanks. To learn more about the benefits of membership, simply visit equip.org. Once again, that's equip.org.
If you thought the pandemic was scary, it may actually pale in comparison to today's pandementia. We're talking about wokeism and its growing legions of followers who have defiantly and dangerously declared their independence from reality. That's right. For those infected by the woke virus, anytime their ideology encounters reality, ideology wins. To help halt the advance of this deadly social and mental disease, you'll want a copy of the upcoming special edition of the Christian Research Journal. In it, you'll feast on penetrating analyses and criticisms of one of the most dangerous ideologies in modern history, all written to help you grasp just how deranged this tyrannical movement actually is. To receive your copy, visit equip.org, that's equip.org, or call 888-7000-CRI That's 888-7000-CRI.
Let's now rejoin Bible Answer Man host Hank Hanegraaff and his guest, Dr. Cary Gress, in their conversation.
Cambridge Dictionary released a new definition of womanhood in 2022, including those who identify as trans women, and it reads as follows. An adult who lives and identifies as female, though they may have been said to have a different sex at birth. Merriam-Webster. Having a gender identity that is opposite of male.
Yeah. And all rooted in gender identity. So it's nothing biological anymore. It's all a matter of just feelings and emotions and sentiments. And it's always interesting, too, to see sort of how much is embraced about when people change to something that they're not. But what about, you know, you see this in the psychology of homosexuality as well. What about when people want to go back to what they originally were? You know, the detransitioners, but also people that want to go back to being heterosexual, you know, that isn't completely looked down upon as well. So, you know, these are all the slip showing of really realizing this is an absolute ideology that they are pushing because it's only one direction and that's accepted, you know, on a national scale. And that's to the deformation of what they are.
Talk about the effect of taking testosterone injections if you're a woman transitioning into a man. The description is horrifying.
No, it's pretty incredible what happens. I mean, first things are things like weight loss and then the vocal cords being tightened and, you know, the voice getting deeper, getting hairier. But the one that's just really awful is the uterus dries up eventually because it doesn't have estrogen and progesterone that obviously is needed in a woman's body to maintain a healthy uterus. So a lot of women using testosterone have to have their uterus removed because it just dries out. So yeah, there's a lot of incredible long-term effects that happen. I know there was one woman I was reading about that she was on testosterone and she had no idea. She had a beautiful voice. Well, her voice changed dramatically and, you know, she can't sing anymore. So it's those kinds of things that are major changes that, you know, most of which are, you're not going back the other direction, especially once you've been on testosterone for longer periods of time.
Even male balding pattern.
Yes, exactly. All of that. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. You really want to be a man?
I think that's a great question, though. I mean, that's the thing is we haven't said anything good about being a woman for 50 years. So, you know, of course they want to be a man. Of course they don't want to deal with a period and all of those things connected with our fertility, you know, breasts. You know, all of that is very awkward and uncomfortable and in many respects hard to adjust to. And this is what these girls want is they don't really want to be boys. They don't really want to be men. They just want to be a non-woman. And, you know, I think that that's the attraction is that aspect, not really to be a man.
Cary, you are brilliant, a brilliant communicator and a brilliant writer. I love what you offer in this book, the Michael Phelps as jockey illustration, in order to expose the utter insanity of the trans narrative. Can you recapitulate that for us? Because I think that makes the point as well as anything I've ever heard.
Oh, that's great. Well, thank you. Well, Michael Phelps, obviously, we all know him to be this amazing swimmer. And, you know, this thought experiment, what if he had been born and been told he should be a jockey instead? You know, it's much more popular to be a jockey. Why don't you become a jockey? And he's like, well, I've got these long legs. Well, why don't we just cut some of your legs off and put, you know, move your feet to a different place and then you could be a great jockey. And I think, you know, it helps because it gets out of the confines of thinking about gender in this case. And instead you're just thinking about the human body and the area in which we're really going to flourish. And, you know, Michael Phelps should not really ever be near a horse as a jockey. And even if he has his feet moved up, part of his legs removed, it's still not going to make him an amazing jockey. And so thinking about these issues and the transitioning that we're doing, the surgeries that we're doing, it helps to look at them in a totally different context and just see the ridiculousness of it, largely based on trendiness and what the culture is dictating to us. So,
and you say the ridiculousness of it, it is ridiculous. And yet you have medical professionals at the top of their professions that are creating vaginas out of penises and penises out of forearms.
Yeah. The forearms and the kind of infections. I mean, this is the other piece that obviously people talk about, but I don't think we talk about enough is just how lucrative this is because you know, when you create a penis out of a forearm, there's going to be years and years and years of infection and problems that are going to arise from that because it's not what the forearm skin was made for. You know, all of these kinds of problems are going to be arising. So not only do the hospitals get the money from the initial surgeries, but there's going to be these years and years of care, ultimately until probably an infection or something will kill that person. But it's just incredibly lucrative. You know, it's like $1 million or something for all those years of care for this person that actually didn't medically need any of it. You know, nothing was wrong with this person, but all because, you know, psychologically they've been told that they can do this. That's why it's being done. So until we see a lot more lawsuits, I think, coming from the detransitioners, we're going to continue to see this being pushed through the hospitals because it's making so much money. And of course, Planned Parenthood has now obviously gotten involved in the administering of testosterone. So that's going to be another piece that they keep promoting because you've got, you know, little girls, the way they used to go get their nails done or something, you know, waltzing into Planned Parenthood and a group of girls for them all to get their testosterone shots. So yeah, it's amazingly lucrative.
I love the section in the book titled The Way Home. Thank God for that section in the book. But you are candid. You say, if we do not reverse course, and you give evidence for this, it's the end of Western civilization as we know it.
Yeah. Yeah. This is, I think, a startling piece. I found the work of J.D. Unwin, who is a sociologist in the 60s, and he talked about how cultures die. You know, we know from Arnold Toynbee, many people know of him as a historian. His famous quote is, "A civilization isn't murdered, it commits suicide." And you can see that in the fall of Rome and, you know, other places very, very easily. But Unwin was interesting because he actually goes through, he was an agnostic. I mean, this was not a man with any kind of religious conviction, but he goes through and basically says, every civilization that has died kind of in the same pattern through this committing of suicide. And he said, when I found this one detail in a civilization, I knew it had about 100 years left. He said, there will be three things from this one detail that will follow. And they are the end of monogamy, the end of faith, and the end of reason. And he said, all of them start when a civilization gets rid of the prohibition against premarital sex. So as soon as premarital sex is allowed and accepted in the culture, then all of those three things will follow. And, you know, it's fascinating. You know, probably if I had read this 50 years ago, I wouldn't have paid much attention. But now when we're seeing that so blatantly in front of us, you know, the absence of faith, the absence of the capacity to reason, of course, the abandonment of monogamy, you know, this man is on to something. Human nature, as much as we try to change it, just isn't really that malleable. And so these are really important things that we, you know, have to keep in mind and have to, if we can't recapture them, then we really don't have a future in Western civilization the way that we think things can go on. But yeah, incredibly insightful. He also, I think another point that Unwin makes that's really interesting was just talking about how just from a, you know, an economy of time aspect, part of the reason the devolution happens is because people are spending all this time on things that don't actually build culture. They're wasting time on relationships that aren't going anywhere. They're not having children. They're not focused on doing work that will help their family, all of these kinds of things. And we can see this, you know, certainly in our own culture. We've got these surrogates that we have set out for men and women, you know, between pornography and pets. Women and men are finding, you know, other ways to sort of satisfy themselves. But these are not the ways in which culture is built. These are just energy wasters and dissipators. And that was his big point, is that's what happens in the culture, is the energy goes somewhere else instead of to building a future.
Yet, in spite of all of what you have just said, and what I would say you have correctly said and eloquently described, you see glimmers of hope.
Yeah, I think there are glimmers of hope. I think one of the things that makes me really hopeful is this group of women that I call the flyover women, even though we're not, you know, I live on one of the coasts. I don't live in flyover country, but I think it's an attitude about women that the women of the, you know, the mean girls and the elite women in the culture sort of think we don't exist. And to a large effect, we don't even know that we exist because of the fact that we're not in the limelight, we're not in the media, we're not represented with any kind of equality. But what I'm seeing is that there are a lot of women like me who are saying something's wrong. I don't know what it is. You know, they're waking up and they're paying attention. they're really pressing into their motherhood and their relationships with their husband, and they're trying to be better women and, you know, combating all of these things that really are destroying the culture. And so I'm seeing a lot of hope with the fact that these women are realizing that we're not alone anymore. Even groups like Moms for America or Moms for Liberty are doing incredible things. I think that this is sort of follows that pattern of, you know, what Phyllis Schlafly was able to do to stop the ERA back in the 70s. These moms groups are doing great work, and they're also know they're doing the right work because they're being targeted by the Biden administration and the Southern Poverty Law Center. So I think that there's some great hope there. You know, and of course, always there's hope with God. We know that He's forming people, the right people for the right moment. That's something we see throughout history, the different saints that are there to push back against the culture and the evils and the sins of that particular day. So I think that we can have great hope, but much of that really depends on embracing this idea that women are made to be mothers, and we're made to live out that vocation. We're made to live within families. We're made to love our husbands. And, you know, it's through that, that's how we step by step rebuild the culture.
Thank you for listening to this special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff and his guest, Dr. Carrie Gress. To hear this Hank Unplugged podcast interview in its entirety, go to equip.org, iTunes, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. Our firm commitment here at the Christian Research Institute is to defend the faith once for all delivered to the saints and equip believers to become true disciples of Jesus Christ. In appreciation for your vital gift to help strengthen and expand CRI's mind-shaping, life-changing outreaches, Hank would like to send you a copy of The End of Woman, How Smashing the Patriarchy Has Destroyed Us by Carrie Gress. Call a resource consultant at 888-7000-CRI, 888-7000-CRI, or visit our website, equip.org. That's equip.org. You can also write CRI at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina 28271. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded by listeners like you. We're on the air because truth matters, life matters more. Dr. Eben Alexander's wildly popular near-death experience book, Proof of Heaven, assures us that no matter what we do in this life, only unconditional love and joy await us in the world to come. But our Lord warned that while the gate to hell is wide, the road to it broad, and those who enter through it are many, the gate is narrow and the way is hard that leads to life, and those who find it are few. Your generous support lets Hank Hanegraaff and CRI speak out against the lies that lead to hell. In appreciation for your gift today, we'll rush you Hank's book, Afterlife, What You Need to Know About Heaven, the Hereafter, and Near-Death Experiences, filled with answers to your questions about life after death. Call 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org now. Again, that's equip.org.